Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Glitterballs. Underwood & Flincher Underground episode 30 is taking a while because it's essentially a double episode. I'm working on double the amount of text, so that will doubtless translate into double the amount of minutes of audio. Now, I was going to try and cut that episode into two parts, you know, two episodes, but I can't because all the action needs to flow continuously. There are no convenient cutting points. So basically, when episode 30 arrives, it will be a double episode and a jolly good one too, if I do say so myself. But you'll discover that soon enough for yourself. And so to this podcast, Glitterballs. This is my 22-year-old early work, written in Slough, in England, in 1995, shortly after my 5-year tenure of working in a live music venue came to an end. And, as I think I mentioned before, it was buried in a suitcase under my bed for all that time until I dug it out last Christmas to bring you the first episode. Now, you may remember it's a TV script that I wrote. I wrote 6 technically half-hour episodes, and this is technically episode 2. Now, of course, the first episode of the story was split into 2 parts, so the podcast is numbered episode 1, episode 2, and that's just like one episode, episode 1. But I'm going to throw that format away because it gets confusing, and instead I'm going to put those 2 halves together and make one podcast of episode 1, and this then logically is episode 2, if you follow me. I'm not sure that I do, but hopefully you're better at that sort of thing than I am. Anyway, so the venue that I worked in is long gone. It was a place called the Old Trout in Windsor, England, and we always used to produce our own food for the bands and their touring crews on site, and that is what this episode of Glitterballs is all about. That sort of thing wasn't necessarily common practice. Most music promoters would have taken the bands out to restaurants or wherever, but we didn't need to because we were a big hot food producing pub. And for a time, I was the person that did the cooking, you know, for the bands anyway. I remember once, actually, we had Blur playing a Glastonbury warm-up, and I made a lovely, you know, spread for them, including a really good vegetable chili. And I remember saying to my wife the next night as we were watching Glastonbury on live television and saying, "Look, my chili is on TV, working its way through the intestines of Blur, maybe in the upper intestine or maybe down into the lower intestine, I'm not sure. But there it is, it's on TV." And sadly, that is the only time that any of my work has ever been on television, including Glitterballs, which is, of course, a pity because that's what it was written for. Anyway, like episode 1, I read this straight through without pre-reading it and without editing it, because, of course, if I did, then I'd never stop and it would be a completely different thing. So this was the first time that I'd seen it since 1995. And, yeah, I thought it was all right. Actually, it certainly took me back in time, and I hope, whether you were around in the 90s or not, that it will take you there too. Scene 1, Glitterball's ballroom, interior, dark. The ballroom is in complete darkness. A phonographic crackling begins. Cut 2, a dimly lit panel of light switches. A white-gloved hand reaches into view and begins to flick switches on. Cut 2, the ballroom, where the large mirror ball in the centre of the ceiling is suddenly illuminated and begins to revolve at the precise moment the phonographic crackle turns into the opening bars of a tango. Amid the swirling points of light, Doreen tangos toward the camera from out of the dark. She stops just outside a pool of light in the centre of the floor. She is dressed in a black sequined dress, black stockings, black high heels, etc. Her hair and makeup, along with her outfit, are combined to great effect. She looks stunning. Cut to an opposite angle. From amid swirling points of light, Max tangos towards the camera and halts just outside the pool of light in the centre of the floor. He is dressed in a billowing white shirt with a small black jacket and tight black trousers. His hands wear white gloves, and on his normally thinning scalp, he wears a flamboyant toupee of lustrous black hair. The two of them stand dramatically opposite one another. Suddenly, from behind him, Max produces a red rose which he tosses through the pool of light to Doreen. She jackknifes down and back in a swift movement, her poise never wavering. Close up on Doreen's face as she turns back to Max, a lock of hair now loose over one eye, the rose caught between her teeth. Then, with the music, they move towards each other and join in the centre of the pool of light. They embrace and begin to dance. They tango perfectly around the floor together through the swirling light from the mirror ball, every now and then passing through pools of light. Doreen spits the rose from her teeth and speaks to Max cheek to cheek as they dance. Their conversation has a dramatic edge to it that befits the dance. Doreen:
you know he'll be here soon.
Max:
I know.
They go to arm's length of each other and come together again. Doreen:
it doesn't have to be this way. We could always move on.
Max:
where to, my love?
He swings her down into his arms. Doreen:
Blackpool?
He spins her up and into the dance, and they come together again. Doreen:
or Eastbourne?
Max:
oh no, darling, no. Don't torture yourself this way. One day, I swear, but right now, the money, we can't.
Doreen:
I know, my sweet, I know. We'll go ahead with it then? Together?
Max:
yes, together.
The music comes to its climax. Max holds Doreen in a captured swoon. They look lovingly into one another's eyes as the music ends. Max:
damn his nose ring.
Glitterballs, a situation comedy written for television but performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. Episode 2, Curry. Scene 2, Max and Doreen's office, interior, day. Tom is talking to Max and Doreen, who, out of shot, are still dressed as we last saw them. We join the conversation as it nears its end, with the camera seeing Tom from Max's point of view. And finally, since my place is a shared house and our phone is a payphone, it's kind of difficult for me to arrange all those high-profile gigs that we'd all like to see down here. Max:
why?
Tom:
well, I'd need to keep shoveling 10p into the slot every minute or so, wouldn't I?
It's difficult trying to negotiate business deals when your conversation's constantly getting interrupted by the pips.
Doreen, looking up from some papers she was looking at:
oh, they're working at a talent agency now, are they? Nice to know they're still in the business. Is Gladys Knight an agent and they're her secretaries?
Max:
he means the payphone pips.
Doreen:
I know, it was just a little joke. Of course we understand, Tom. It must be hell for you.
She enacts a telephone conversation.
Hello, can we have a concert with Peters and Lee, please? Beep, beep, beep.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Shepherd. Beep, beep, beep.
How much will they cost then? Beep, beep.
Max:
yes, I think you've just about run out of change there, dear.
Tom:
Well, precisely, Max. That's my problem. So I was wondering if I could use your phone for business purposes. Perhaps you can lend me some office space as well. Just a small room would do. Table, chair, phone.
Max:
oh, go on.
Tom:
maybe a fax machine?
Max raises his eyebrows encouragingly.
Tom: a desktop publishing suite would be handy. And a photocopier.
Max:
is that it?
Tom nods.
Max: nothing else?
Tom shakes his head.
Max: so let me just see if I've got everything. In order to book popular acts, you'd like us to provide you with a dressing room, an unlimited expenses dining tab at the local Italian restaurant, an office with a phone, a fax machine, a desktop publishing suite, and a photocopier.
Tom nods.
Max: are you sure you haven't left anything out? A company car, perhaps? A couple of return flights to New York on Concorde? First class, of course. Maybe you'd like a sunken bath with a sauna next to your office with a couple of topless lady masseurs to ease away the aches and strains of a hard day's running up a six-figure telephone bill.
Tom:
well, not all those things are necessary, Max. They're just the ideal requirements.
Max:
I see. So what could you get by without?
Tom:
Well, the flights to New York won't be required, and the bath seems a bit excessive. But a bit about the car and the topless messieurs, Max.
I'm talking about the office, the desktop, what's it, and all the rest of it. As if you didn't know.
Tom. Well, do you have any of those things already?
Doreen.
We have a dressing room, and a phone, of course, and there is a room you might be able to use as an office, but as for the other items, I'm afraid they're not really the sort of thing we've ever had much of a call for around here.
Max, and as much as we'd love to pop out and buy them for you, I'm afraid our budget doesn't extend to such dizzying heights at the moment.
Tom, I see. Well, could I see the room, then?
Doreen,
of course.
She rises.
Max, what room are we talking about here?
Doreen,
Gladys's office.
Max smiles.
Scene 3, Tom's office. Interior, dark. The camera is in the office, focused on the door. The door opens and light from the hallway comes in. Doreen's silhouetted hand reaches in for the light switch and the room fills with light. She opens the door and enters, followed by Tom and Max.
Doreen,
here we are.
From their point of view, we can see the room is basically a storeroom. Cleaning utensils, mops, buckets, brooms, self-assembled metal shelves cluttered with boxes, tools, electrical junk, etc. In the middle of the mess is a table strewn with boxes, old newspapers, and an upturned wooden chair. There are no windows. The room is lit by a bare bulb hanging from the ceiling.
Doreen. This is where Gladys, our cleaner, keeps all her bits and pieces. We also use it as a bit of a storeroom, as you can see. But with a bit of tidying up, it could be quite nice.
Max is poking about in the junk.
Tom.
Yeah, lovely. Is there a phone?
Max reaches down and pulls out a 1970s dial telephone from the rubbish.
Yes, here's one.
He listens for a dialing tone.
It's a bit of an antique, but it still works.
Doreen.
Oh, don't be so hard on yourself, Max.
She laughs and pats Tom's hand.
Tom. No, it's great. Fantastic.
Max.
Well, I'm so glad you approve, Tom. Now, naturally, if you intend to let this room as an office and use our phone bill for all your business calls, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you for some kind of, shall we say, rent?
Tom.
Rent?
Doreen.
Now, Max.
Max,
shall we say 50% of gross box office door receipts?
Tom,
how about an itemized phone bill?
Max,
oh no, this office facility alone.
Doreen,
Max.
Tom,
I'm sorry, Max, maybe this isn't such a good idea after all. I'm not exactly rolling in it at the moment.
Max laughs.
Huh, who is?
30%.
Tom,
10.
Max,
20.
They stare at each other like gunfighters.
Tom.
15.
Max.
20 and no itemized phone bill.
Tom.
Done. Brightly. Well, I'll get to work tidying this up a bit and then see if I can't sort out some of those top popular acts.
Doreen.
That's super, Tom. We'll leave you to it. Come on, Max. I'm sure we've got more important things to be doing than adding to the clutter in here.
Max is smiling, still pleased with his deal.
Max.
Of course.
Doreen exits. Max is following her as Tom's voice catches him in the doorway.
Tom.
Oh, Max.
Max turns.
Hmm?
Tom.
I don't suppose there's any chance you could pull a fax machine out of this mess like you did with the phone.
Max.
Oh, yes, of course. I'll leave it in the sauna in the next room, along with the topless massage girls. All right.
Max exits, closing the door behind him.
Tom, smiling flatly.
Fabulous.
Scene 4. The pub. Interior. Day. Tom is sitting at a table in the corner reading a contract as Dave arrives with 2 pints of lager. Dave sits down. Tom is absorbed in the contract. Dave shakes his head disbelievingly.
Dave.
I still can't believe it. You've got arse water.
Tom. Reading.
Hmm. Well, I've got Donnie at Rampant Talent to thank for that.
Dave.
How'd you manage it?
Tom.
Well, it's a long and difficult process, Dave. But I've known Donnie a long time, you know.
Dave.
Yeah, well, I suppose you'd have to. Is this the album tour, then?
Tom lowers the contract and picks up his pint.
Yep. Arse water on the road.
Cheers.
He takes a sup of his drink. It's their first big tour in ages.
Dave. What's the contract like? Any problems? Tom. Well, a few. Money, of course. A band like Arsewater don't come cheap. And then there's the catering side of things. He reads from the contract. Promoter guarantees to provide excellent quality hot vegetarian meals for 6 persons at a pleasant, convenient location 2 hours prior to the artiste's performance. Now, the only kind of donation Max is likely to make to a request like this is 6 dustbin lids from the back of the local pizzeria and directions how to get to the bins they came from. Be like a night out with Top Cat. Dave. What about in-house catering? Couldn't we do something for them ourselves? Tom. Well, that's what I'm hoping. Maybe, just maybe, I can convince Max to let us use his kitchen to make up some tasty veggie nosh. We could serve it to the band on the premises, straight from the oven. What do you reckon? Cut to... Scene 5, Glitterball's kitchen, interior, day. A small but industrially fitted kitchen with a big stove, fridge freezer, shelves full of pots, deep fat fryer and a metal work surface. Max, Doreen and Tom are talking by the work surface. We open with a close-up of Max's face for his first line. Max.
Ho ho, no chance.
Tom. Why not? Max,
you're not qualified for one thing. Furthermore, I'm not insured to have you in the kitchen. I can't have you mucking around in here with sharp knives and pots of hot steaming parsnips. It could prove disastrous.
Tom,
I'd be careful.
Max,
oh, it's not you I'm worried about. It's the insurance company. They'd be careful, all right. Careful as they stripped me of everything I have. The shirt from off my back, the shoes from off my feet, my trousers. Why, even the very pants from off my...
Doreen, deadpan. Don't get yourself excited now, dear.
Max. No, I'm sorry, Tom, but it's out of the question.
Tom.
Well, what about taking him out to a restaurant, then? It shouldn't cost you too much.
Max.
Oh, it won't cost me anything at all, matey. They're not our dinner guests.
Tom.
Max, I can't afford it. Not before the gig.
Max.
Well, you should think of these things before you go signing contracts, shouldn't you, young man?
Doreen.
I could do it.
Max.
Do what?
Doreen.
Make up this vegetarian food for the band. I like cooking. It'd be a challenge.
Max, knowingly.
I'll say.
Doreen gives him a look.
Max, I mean, to cook for all those people, and vegetarians at that.
Doreen, nonsense. To Tom. I used to do all the cooking at our old pub, Tom. My cuisine was legendary among the locals, wasn't it, Max?
Max, yes, dear. Legendary.
Doreen.
And vegetarians are just like normal people, aren't they? They just don't like meat with their 2 veg. Easy.
Tom.
Well, there's a bit more to it than that. Perhaps I could assist you.
Doreen.
Oh, no, I'll be fine. And what Max says about you not being allowed in the kitchen is true, I'm afraid.
Tom.
Well, how about I lend you a recipe for some things? Falafel?
Doreen.
No, I've never felt better, Tom.
Don't you worry. I've got a wonderful vegetable curry recipe up here.
She taps the side of her head. Max raises an eyebrow.
Just you leave it to me. At the end of the meal, they'll all be scraping the patterns off their plates.
For 6 persons, you say, Tom?
Tom.
6, yeah.
Doreen.
No problem.
Tom.
There was just one more thing.
Doreen.
And what was that?
Tom.
Whereabouts are they going to eat?
Max.
In the ballroom, I imagine. There are tables in there.
Tom.
But the support band will be sound-checking.
Max.
So?
Tom.
Well, Arsewater.
Max.
I beg your pardon?
Tom.
Oh, the band. They're called Arsewater.
Max looks disgusted.
Tom. Well, they're a big deal, Max. We can't just lump them in there to eat in another band's noisy sound-check. They're going to want to relax.
Max.
How better to relax than to music? That is, I assume, what this other band will be playing.
Tom.
Yeah, but...
Max.
I see no problem then.
Tom.
The problem is, if they get crummy treatment, then that's it. They'll tell their agent and there'll be no more acts from him. He'll tell his agent mates and there'll be nothing from them either. We have to look after these acts, Max. Show them poor service and we'll be out of business before we've even started.
Max.
Good God, poor service. What do they expect? Waitresses? Port and cigars? What with her,
he indicates Doreen,
in the kitchen, I suppose it'd be me in a little French maid's outfit waiting on their every whim, wouldn't it?
Doreen, don't get yourself excited now, dear. Max reacts. then turns to Tom and addresses him in falsely controlled but pleasant tones.
So, where do you suggest they eat then, Tom? What about the dressing room?
Tom, would be a bit cluttered. Max is just about to lose his strained composure when Doreen interjects. Doreen,
how about our dining room?
Max,
what?
Doreen,
our dining room, upstairs in the flat.
Max,
have you gone quite mad?
As Max begins his protest, Doreen steps lightly in between Max and Tom, and reaching behind her, she takes hold of Max's testicles.
Doreen.
Now, Max, I'm sure if you gave it some thought, you'd agree that it's probably the nicest room we have to offer. And we do want Arsewater to be happy now, don't we?
Max, his voice affected by her grip on his testicles.
Yes. Yes, now that I come to think of it, that's a splendid idea. Splendid. Tom.
Well, that would be brilliant. You're sure it's okay?
Max.
Oh, my word, yes.
Doreen. That's settled, then. She releases Max and turns to him with a smile. Isn't it exciting, Max? I'm really quite looking forward to it.
Max. Oh, yes. Thrilling. I'm thrilled.
Dissolve to Scene 7, Night of the Arsewater Gig.
Scene 7, Glitterball's Kitchen, Interior Early Evening. A pot of unpleasant-looking green muck is bubbling horribly in shot. Things can be seen toiling in it, a carrot, a floret of cauliflower, some Brussels sprouts, etc. Doreen's hands come into shot over the pot holding an industrial can of mushy peas, which she tips into the potion below. Cut to Doreen and Max both wearing aprons. Doreen picks up a wooden spoon and begins stirring the curry.
Doreen. Mmm, gorgeous. The smell of India.
Max.
Really? I wasn't aware that India was an international dumping ground for toxic waste.
Doreen.
Max, you're so unadventurous when it comes to food. You just don't know what you're missing.
Max.
Yes, well, thankfully I'm not missing any of my marbles, which I'd have to be to want to eat that. I can only thank God I'm not in Arsewater.
Doreen.
You'll be in a lot worse than that if you don't stop insulting my cooking.
She sips some of the curry from her spoon.
Hmm, still need something.
Max.
Yes, beef, chicken, a can of Spam.
Doreen. She goes past him to the fridge and opens it. You can't put meat into a vegetarian dish. Let's see, what have we got in here? She scans the contents of the fridge. Ah, this should do it. She removes a cling-filmed glass bowl with cloudy liquid in it, shuts the fridge door and heads back to the pot.
Max. What's that?
Doreen.
Fish stock. Leftovers from that fisherman's pie I made last week.
Max.
You can't put fish stock into a vegetable curry.
Doreen.
Oh, of course you can. It's not meat.
Max.
But they're vegetarians. What kind of a vegetable is a fish?
Doreen.
Oh, vegetarians eat fish, Max. What would they be if they ate nothing but vegetables?
Max.
Vegetarians?
Doreen.
No, Max. They'd be ill.
Max.
Isn't Tom a vegetarian?
Doreen.
Precisely.
She tips the stock into the pot.
Max. Oh, yes, I suppose so.
Doreen.
Now, we'll leave this to stand so all the flavours can mingle. The band won't be here for a while yet, so you and I can go and get ready.
Doreen exits. Max peers uncertainly into the curry pot, makes a face, and follows her out. Scene 8, Glitterball's ballroom, early evening, about an hour later. We see Reggie on the stage putting up stage lights. As the camera pulls back, we can see the PA has been assembled. The floor is littered with flight cases, cables, microphone stands, lights, etc. The shot pulls back further until it passes over the shoulders of Tom and Pete, who are leaning on the bar. Pete is, as always, wearing his baseball cap with a rolled-up cigarette stuck to his lower lip. Pete.
You had a look at that curry, then, have you, Tom?
Tom. Yeah, horrible, isn't it? I'd be afraid to put that on my roses, let alone in my mouth.
Pete. A beat.
Ah, your roses don't go much on curry, then?
Tom. I haven't actually got any roses, Pete.
Pete.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Chucking curry all over them. Nah, your roses, they like manure, don't they? Hot steaming
Yeah, that's right, Pete.
Pete.
So where's Dave, then?
Tom. Him and his family have gone to visit their granny in London.
Pete.
Oh, yeah. Look her, is she?
Tom.
Who? Dave's gran?
Pete.
Yeah. Look her.
Tom. Well, I wouldn't know. I've never seen her. Why do you ask?
Pete. Well, Dave's mum, eh?
He nods.
Tom. What about her?
Pete. She's a bit of all right, ain't she? Dave's mum.
Tom looks uncertain for a moment, then turns away. Close up on Tom as he bites his finger for a moment to suppress his emotions before turning back with perfect composure to Pete. Tom laughs.
Don't be daft, Pete. She's old enough to be your mother.
Pete. Yeah, eh? A buzzer sounds from the foyer. Tom, glad of the distraction, goes to answer it. Scene 9. Glitterball's foyer. Interior. Early evening. Through the glass doors, we can see a group of 6 men in jeans, T-shirts and assorted jacket styles peering through the glass into the gloomy foyer. They all wear plastic tour laminates around their necks or clipped to their clothes. Tom enters the foyer and opens the doors.
Tom. Ice water?
A bearded man in his 30s answers. He is Ray, the tour manager.
Ray. Yes, mate. You Tom Shepherd?
Tom.
Yeah, that's me.
He extends his hand. Ray takes it. Ray manipulates Tom's hand into an odd streetwise handshake. Tom manages to bluff his way through it.
Ray. Ray Thomas, I'm Arsewater's tour manager. Where can we load in?
Tom.
Stage doors, just down there.
He points.
I'll go down and open them up for you now.
Ray.
A nice one.
Turns to the man behind him and points.
All right, down now.
To Tom.
I'll come with you, Tom.
Tom.
Cool.
Scene 10, Glitterball's ballroom, interior, early evening. Tom and Ray cross the floor in the direction of the stage. To the side of the stage and back are 2 doors with a push-bar opening system. Tom leads Ray towards them.
Ray. So many tickets for tonight?
Tom.
Oh yeah, it's going to be busy.
Ray.
Excellent. So what are the catering arrangements for tonight then, Tom? Chinese, Italian, Indian?
Tom opens the doors. Arsewater and their guitar technician start to wheel in their equipment.
Tom. Indian.
Ray.
Nice one. Local?
Tom.
Very. You're eating in, actually.
Ray.
Oh, another homemade veggie curry, is it?
Tom nods sadly.
Ray. It's all right, mate. We're used to it. The British music venue circuit is one long string of amateur curry houses. This'll be our 3rd one this week. Last night we had an egg biryani, and the night before that it was chickpeas.
He pinches his nose with one hand and wafts his other behind his backside.
Kids at the front were passing out that night, I can tell you. Ha ha ha!
He laughs loudly and gives Tom a shove. Tom laughs insincerely.
Ha ha! Ah, nightmare.
Ray, talking of smells, he sniffs and pulls a face. What's that? Have you had the drains up or something?
Tom.
Yeah, the drains have been getting a bit up lately. They're all right now, though. Nice and, down.
Ray.
Oh, just as well, eh? So where's the dressing room then, Tom?
Tom points to a door just right of the stage.
Tom. Just over there on the right, Ray.
Then.
Listen, I've got to go and sort out some, things.
Get you some beers, yeah?
Ray.
Beers, yeah, nice one.
Pete comes up to Ray.
All right, mate. Fella over there tells me you're doing the sound tonight. You're Ray, are you?
Ray.
Yeah,
that's right.
Pete.
Pete.
They shake, immediately connecting in the same streetwise handshake.
Well, as you can see.
They turn to look at the PA.
Rhubarb, rhubarb, mids, rhubarb, rhubarb, Clark Technic, rhubarb, crossovers.
Tom leaves the nodding pair behind and heads off across the floor, muttering under his breath.
Tom, have we had the drains up? Not unless she's planning a dessert course.
Dissolve. Scene 11, Glitterball's kitchen, interior, evening. We open on Doreen's rouged lips as she sips curry from a wooden spoon. As we pull back, we see she is smartly dressed for the evening beneath her apron. In the background, we can hear a band sound-checking their set. The sound is audible, but not so intrusive that we can't hear the characters. Tom enters. His sleeves are rolled up, his hands are dirty, and he looks flustered. More careworn than when we last saw him.
Tom. Well, that's all the clutter off the dance floor. They should be ready to eat soon, Doreen. How's it coming along?
Doreen.
Oh, fine, Tom. I'm just waiting for the rice to cook and then we can dish up.
Gary and Sally enter.
Gary.
Bar's ready to go, Mrs. Price.
Doreen, abstractedly busy with curry.
Thank you, Gary.
Gary.
All right, Tom.
Tom. All right, Gary. Sally. Sally smiles. Doreen glances up at the mention of Sally's name. Doreen.
Oh, Sally, will you get 6 plates for me and lay them out on the work surface, please?
Sally.
Yes, Mrs. Price.
She goes to a store cupboard. Tom.
So is everything ready for the meal upstairs?
Doreen.
Oh, yes. Max has been quite busy up there making things nice for our guests.
Scene 12. Max and Doreen's flat. Dining room. Evening. In a series of quick shots, we take in the smiling faces of Liberace, James Last, and Angela Rippon. As the camera pulls back from the last one, we see it is in a picture frame, as are the others standing on a sideboard. Also on the sideboard are a number of cheap trophies. The room reflects Max and Doreen's slightly glitzy taste. Loud, tacky, but not horrible. The curtains are drawn because it is now dark outside, and the room is lit by a bulb lost in a plastic crystal chandelier. In the background, we can hear an instrumental bossa nova version of Strangers in the Night. Max is fussing over the dining table, which is laid with tablecloth, best cutlery, and drinking glasses, with white napkins neatly protruding. In the middle of the table is a pitcher of water, and to either side of it, 2 small candles in red glass pots glow dimly. Max is smartly dressed and bewigged.
Max, mind I'm going to all this bother of a bunch of louts who call themselves Arsewater? I can't begin to guess. Arsewater. Appropriate, I suppose.
There is a knock at the door. Max opens it. Outside in the corridor stands Tom.
Tom.
All right, Max.
Max.
What exactly is Arsewater?
He makes way for Tom to enter, and Tom does so.
Tom. Well, it's just a name, isn't it? Like Kajagoogoo or Black Lace.
Max.
I think there's quite a gulf of difference between Black Lace and Arsewater.
Tom.
Yeah, definitely. Black Lace were proper crap.
Max is about to say something when Tom heads him off by drawing attention to the table.
Well, this is really impressive, Max.
Max, with pride.
I know.
Tom.
Lavish.
Max.
Isn't it?
Tom.
Fit for a king.
Max, chuckling with bashfulness.
Oh, stop.
Tom.
I'll go and get the band.
Scene 13. Glitterball's kitchen, interior, evening. Doreen is ladling rice onto the plates as Gary and Sally look on. The noise of the sound-checking band has been replaced by background noises. A laugh, a bass drum thud, a shout or two. Tom puts his head in through the open door.
Tom. You ready to serve, then?
Doreen.
Just dishing up now. We'll be up in a minute.
Tom.
Righto.
Scene 14. Max and Doreen's dining room. Interior. Evening. Tom is ushering Ray, Arsewater, and their guitar tech into the dining room. Max is assisting them to their seats with a big smile on his face. 2 of the band make covert fun of Max's wig.
Ray.
Well, this is a really far out spread, Tom. Cheers very much.
Tom.
Don't thank me, Ray. Thank Max here. Max is a manager of Glitterballs.
Ray.
Oh, nice one, Max. Fantastic job.
The rest of the party mumble their appreciation. Max basks in it.
Max. Well, if you're having guests to eat in your home, make it an occasion. That's what I say.
Ray.
Your home? Really? Well, that's brilliant.
To the group.
Best behaviour then, lads. No food fights.
The group laugh. We cut to Max, who is chuckling humorlessly and looking at Tom. Cut to Tom, who looks back at Max, laughing insincerely and looking anxious. Enter Doreen, Sally and Gary carrying 6 plates of curry.
Here we are. Curry a la Doreen.
She chuckles. Doreen, Sally and Gary serve the food to the diners, who smile and mumble their appreciation. This gradually ceases as one by one the food is set in front of them. The table is silent, the diners unable to take their eyes off the curry. Max and Doreen stand together at the head of the table, beaming.
Doreen. Oh, don't stand on ceremony, lads. Dig in.
The diners nervously raise their knives and forks and begin to eat, tentatively. Their strained smiles and slow chewing betray the foulness of the food that their appreciative ings try to hide.
Ray.
Nice one.
Band member 1.
Absolutely delicious. Thanks.
Band member 2.
Yeah, exotic.
Band member 3.
Can you pass the water, please?
All the diners reach out for the pitcher, removing their napkins from their glasses and calling out for water.
Band, variously.
Yeah, me too. Can I have it next?
Doreen, concerned.
Oh, it's not too hot, I hope.
Band member 4, pleasantly.
Oh, you might say that.
Doreen laughs.
Well, that's the way we Brits like it, isn't it?
You don't want us standing over you while you're trying to enjoy your meal. To Sally and Gary, as she starts to leave. Come on, you two. She turns back, smiling. Our work here is done. Anything else you boys need, just ask Max. She indicates Max, who smiles benevolently. Dissolve to plates being pushed away, some empty, some half-eaten. Ray.
That was lovely, Max. My compliments to the chef.
Max chuckles.
You're too kind.
Ray indicates sideboard.
I noticed the trophies there, Max. You're a bit of a sportsman, are you?
Max, modestly.
Oh, no. They're a ballroom dancing trophies, actually. My wife and I used to dance.
Ray.
Really? So that's how you came to be in the ballroom business, is it?
Max.
Oh, well, yes. We saw glitter balls as a bit of an investment.
Ray.
What, you're just doing the live music as a sort of side thing, are you?
Max.
Yes, a sort of side thing.
Band member 1. Well, it's a really cool place you got here, man.
Pardon. Compliments to the chef.
The other band members start to fart loudly, one after the other, making various comments of disgust and amusement. Max, politely,
I'll just open a window, shall I?
He opens a window. The diners are now looking a bit green. Tom,
can I get you lads anything else? We've got nuts, crisps.
The diners utter low moans of protest, all now looking very ill. Max, with a big smile,
I may be able to lay on some dessert. I believe we have some cold tapioca pudding downstairs.
Band member 2 projectile vomits into the opposite face of band member 4. Max looks horrified. Band member 1 projectile vomits into the opposite face of the guitar tech. Tom looks horrified. Ray gets to his feet and begins to lurch. Max moves to help him. Max,
are you all right?
Ray projectile vomits at Max, taking his wig off with the force of it. Max,
ah!
Pandemonium breaks out as the diners begin to coat the dining room in vomit. They hit each other, Tom, the pictures, the trophies, the walls, the curtains, even the plastic chandelier. Tom and Max are near hysterical. Tom.
Oh my God.
Max.
Oh my dining room.
Tom.
It's that bloody curry.
Max.
Don't you insult my wife's cooking.
Tom.
Well, what the bloody hell do you think it is? The sight of your wallpaper?
Max, realising.
Oh my God, the stupid cow.
Tom,
I'll never work in show business again.
Max,
show business? Screw show business, we're all going to go to prison for this. Prison!
Band member 3 is lying on the floor. He reaches out to Max.
Help me!
Max,
shut up, you bastard!
Doreen's voice is heard from the hallway as she approaches. Doreen, brightly, out of view.
Everything all right, boys?
She enters and stops dead in the doorway, horrified. Doreen.
Oh, good heavens!
Max.
You murderer! Look what you've done! You've slaughtered Arsewater!
She ignores him and goes to the aid of band member 3, who is nearest her on the floor. She kneels beside him, takes his face in her hands and inspects it. Doreen.
Max, phone for an ambulance. Tell them what's happened.
Max.
Are you mad? They'll realise we've killed them!
Doreen,
well, what do you want to do, Max? Bury them under the floorboards?
Max,
oh no, of course not. But can't we just give them some milk of magnesia or something and slip them 50 quid to keep them quiet?
Doreen,
Max, get a grip. This is food poisoning.
Max, pointing at Doreen as he begins to back away slowly.
Yes, and you poisoned them.
Doreen,
oh, don't be absurd, Max. Something like this takes time. Maybe 24 hours.
Tom,
24 hours? So, something they ate this time yesterday?
Doreen, tending to the sick.
Possibly. It depends on what they ate.
Tom.
It was egg biryani. Ray was telling me about it.
Doreen.
Well, that's it then, isn't it? Eggs. Risky business these days.
Max.
What? So we're innocent?
Doreen.
Of course we are. Now, phone an ambulance.
Max, relieved.
Oh, thank God.
He lifts the face of the nearest band member from the pool of sick on the table and kisses it.
Thank you.
Doreen.
Max!
Max drops a head back onto the table where it lands in the pool of sick with a wet thud. He hops over the prone body of band member 1 on his way out. Max.
Yes, I'm going.
He exits.
Scene 15. Streets. Exterior. Night. A quick shot of ambulances rushing through the streets. Sirens wailing. Scene 16. Glitterball's ballroom. Interior. Night. The ballroom is bustling with punters. Music is pumping over the PA from a CD. It is shadowy, with the light coming from the stage lights and the bar. Pete is smoking a roll-up at the PA desk. He is lit by a small lamp. Dave comes up to him wearing a coat. All right, Pete. Where's Tom?
Upstairs, looking after the band. They've all been sick.
Dave.
Oh, nasty. Why's that then?
Pete.
It was the curry. Not the one they ate here, but the one they had last night.
Dave.
Oh, right. So our curry's okay then, is it? I'm starving.
Pete.
Yeah, it's all right. There's some left in the kitchen.
Dave.
Oh, brilliant. I'm going to go and nick a bit. Give us a shout if you see Max.
Pete.
All right, mate.
Scene 17. Kitchen. Dave slops a ladle of curry into a bowl and tucks into it with a spoon. He chews a moment, pauses, smiles a not-bad smile, and proceeds to eat the rest of it. Scene 18. Corridor outside Max and Doreen's dining room. Four ambulance men are stretchering out the sick. Max is with the lead ambulanceman. Doreen follows. Ambulance man to Max.
Is there a back way we can get these people out? I don't fancy struggling through that crowd downstairs with them.
Max.
Yes, of course. I'll show you.
Scene 19. Max and Doreen's dining room. Two ambulance men are stretchering Ray out. Tom is walking alongside the stretcher, holding Ray's hand in both of his and stroking it. Tom.
Now, you'll be sure to explain to Donnie that it wasn't us who did this, won't you? Tell him how we looked after you and what a nice time you had.
Ray groans indistinctly. Tom is prevented from staying with him as Ray is taken through the doorway, which isn't wide enough for Tom to get through as well. As the stretcher leaves, Dave enters. On seeing the room, he reacts.
Bloody hell, Tom. Looks like your mum's bedroom on a Sunday morning.
Tom.
Oh, bloody ha. I've had a sodding nightmare here tonight, I have.
Dave.
So I see. What are you going to do about a band now, then?
Tom.
Well, fortunately, tonight's a bit of a double headline, and the other band have agreed to play an extended set.
Dave.
Oh, so who's the other band, then?
Tom.
Beep.
So there you know, the producer would insert the name of the real band, you know, from reality, who would play that night.
Cut two.
Scene 20. Glitterball's ballroom, the stage. Tonight's special guest band from the real indie charts play a song to the enthusiastic audience. Their performance is intercut with scenes of crowd fervour. Max ushering ambulance men out the back way with arse water. Pete at the sound controls, Reggie on the lighting controls, etc. Scene 21. Max and Doreen's office, end of the night. The gig is finished. Doreen is counting money. Max, still in his vomit-caked suit, is disgustedly inspecting his wig. Max.
Well, it was fortunate that we had that other lot to play, wasn't it, dear?
Doreen, still counting.
Mmm.
There is a knock at the door. Max.
Come in.
The door opens and Tom enters, followed by a man in a baseball cap carrying a briefcase. Around his neck, he wears a laminate. He's followed by Dave, who closes the door behind him. Tom.
All right, this is Bob.
Beeps.
Tour manager. Doreen.
Hello, Bob.
Bob.
Hi. I just wanted to say thanks for having us and all that.
Doreen.
Oh, thank you, Bob. I don't know what we would have done without your boys.
Bob.
Oh, we're only too happy to help.
Salmonella, was it?
I used to be in catering myself at one time.
Max.
Well, yes, we believe so. 24 hours and what have you.
Bob.
Oh, it doesn't have to be 24 hours.
Doreen.
It doesn't.
Bob.
Oh, no. Can take no time at all if you use the right ingredients.
Aside, Max's eyes widen. He turns back casually to Bob.
Oh, and what ingredients might they be?
Bob.
Oh, I don't know. Fish?
Dave farts loudly. Dave.
Oh, sorry.
Doreen.
Fish?
Bob.
Oh, yeah. Scrombotoxic fish poisoning could take as little as 10 minutes.
Dave is looking very green. A little groan escapes him. Max, smiling nervously.
You haven't been anywhere near that curry, have you, Dave?
Dave begins to spasm. Cut to... Scene 22. Hallway outside Max and Doreen's office. Shot of Max and Doreen's closed office door. We hear Dave vomiting, identical to the sound effects used in the earlier vomit scene. Then, from inside the office, Max out of view.
Oh no! Not my office as well!
The music you're listening to is called The Show Must Be Go by Kevin MacLeod. For more information,
visit incomptech.com.
And so, there we are. That was Glitterballs, episode 2. I hope you enjoyed it. Now, maybe some of you thought that the band name, Arsewater, was a bit unlikely. And when I reread it, I thought the same thing. But then I remembered that there actually used to be a band called Fudge Tunnel. And that kind of, you know, vulgar name wasn't unheard of. Which some of you may remember, and indeed I suppose is probably still common today, I wouldn't know. I'm disconnected from all that sort of thing now. But yeah, so there you are, perhaps not so far-fetched after all. And in fact, if there is a band out there called Arsewater, I'm not writing about you. Any resemblances to persons living or dead, of course, is purely coincidental. Anyway, and so that's it for now then, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, as always, for your patronage. You are the wind beneath my wings, and I thank you. But from me for now, until the next time, take care and farewell.
MikeBennettAuthor.com